Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Between Realities, the VR podcast that you absolutely love and cannot get enough of. My name is Alex VR. I am joined here by my co-host Skiva, aka Harry.
How you doing?
Hello. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you, sir?
I'm pretty good, man. I'm pretty good. You know, besides all the weirdness going on in the world, I have a lot of time at home with my family, and it's been really good to spend a lot of time with my daughter and stuff, so it's been great. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got extra time to do video editing and stuff, finally, which
yeah,
is
you've
awesome.
Been pumping out some
Yeah, I put out a video, and I have another one that I'll probably upload tomorrow that's edited and ready to go, and I'm just going to keep going.
Nice. So, excellent.
It's pretty exciting. And,
very cool.
So this is episode...
Seven.
Mm-hmm. This is episode 7. Yeah. And this episode, I believe, is coming to you a little sooner than episodes normally do for us. You know, we're in this quarantine time. We all have the extra time. Mm-hmm. A little bit of extra content never hurt anybody. So
exactly. Yeah. We decided to record a little bit early for this one and put it out there in a couple days. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Good.
Well, I love it. So... Today's guest, I am really, really excited about. This is someone who I basically became a fan of instantaneously when I discovered her Twitter. She is the CEO and co-founder of Numena, which is a company that is builds VR experiences for everyone. She is a VR architect. She is a philosopher that discusses the XR industry, and we're super excited to have her. So without further ado, please welcome to the show... And Andrea Ion Kojokoru.
How you doing?
Hi.
Hello,
Thank
Andrea.
You so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is actually a pleasure and an honor for me. You know, like I was just saying, I'm a huge fan. When I stumbled across your Twitter, I like instantaneously connected with like everything that I was seeing. You know, like I was like, okay, no, we need Andrea for the show. Like you are the person who we've been wanting to have a conversation with. So very, very excited.
Definitely.
Perfect.
Good stuff.
Perfect.
So tell us a little bit about you. Kind of give us a little bit of background, maybe like how you got involved in the VR industry and what Numena is doing.
Right. So I'm going to kind of give you a short summary because my story tends to be a bit long and complicated, but I guess that's everyone's story.
Yeah.
So afterwards, if you're interested in certain parts, feel free to ask. So I'm an architect. I'm a traditional architect. But my dad has always been a huge amateur programmer, and he's taught himself a bunch of programming languages. And in the 80s, I grew up in Eastern Europe, and somehow my dad always managed to get computers home. So we had computers at home in the early 80s, and I grew up with this thing around me. And because that's how kind of my dad just kind of figured it out on his own, I always assume it's something I can just pick up whenever I want it. Mm-hmm. So I've been dabbing in it here and there, but as an architect, you don't really have a chance to use it in an architecture office. And if you do, it's not really for the creative stuff. You still have the concept architects coming up with this amazing idea and building shape, and then maybe in a later stage of the construction, you get some guys who code a way to count the windows or how many doors or what kind of type of bricks would be better on the south facade.
I see.
And for me, that just kind of wasn't really doing it. I really wanted a way to be an architect and be creative and also program things, because that's kind of the thing I always had in the back of my head. And then when about 5 years ago, I tried VR for the first time, and I was very lucky because I did not, that first experience was not cardboard, was actually a DK2, I think.
Sweet.
So it was an amazing experience.
What app was it?
It was a company in Stuttgart that was doing a demo for Audi. Actually, I don't even think it was the thing they had released at that time, but, a friend of mine that was doing a PhD in Stuttgart got an invitation from them to go check out this VR thing, and he had no interest. He forwarded me the email and said, hey, maybe this is kind of down your alley. I just don't have time for these guys. And I read the email and I said, sure. So I contacted them and I said, you know, I want to check this out on behalf of my friend. So they were really nice. They made an appointment with me and I showed up during my lunch break. And I put the thing on and I was just blown away. Mm-hmm. It was just the most, I mean, I guess everyone in VR has a story, mm-hmm. but I'm the kind of person that's very hard to impress, especially with like, mm-hmm. I've seen so many things and spent my life on doing so many things and traveling around and living in so many countries, and I've gone through so much like good and bad shit that I'm usually kind of like, yeah, okay. Like I don't really easily get pumped up.
Yeah.
And I put this thing on and I was like, oh my God, it was
life changing. Like
yeah. Like I've never had really like an epiphany in my life. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not, you know, particularly religious or anything, but I put this thing on and it was really like, oh my God.
Yeah. You know, I think most of us have similar experience. Like, I mean, we're like, okay, we need to be a part of this. Like you put it on and you're like, okay, hold on. And you like immediately go back to the drawing board. You're like, how do I include this?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I think the closest I'll ever get to some kind of religious epiphany, to be honest. Like, and basically, 4 weeks later, I quit my job.
Amazing.
I was like, I'm done with whatever it is that I'm doing now. It's like, I love architecture. But this is something that's like shaped my world to such an extent that I cannot imagine living life further without doing this, wow. basically.
And would you have considered yourself a gamer at all when that happened to you? Like, do you play games? Do you like games?
This is the best part. I have never met a game in my life that I could play for more than 5 minutes.
Wow.
My father has been bringing me computer games at home since I was 3 years old, and this was in the early 80s. I'm old. I had absolutely no interest in games. No interest. None.
Wow.
I grew up with games all around me. I grew up with computers around me. I had things my friends were so jealous of. I couldn't care less. I could not see the point. It was like, okay, you move the arrows and you move through this thing and you shoot around. I couldn't care less. I had things where you had to like save a princess. I had the thing with the cars. I had like the most amazing thing. There was this thing where you were like jumping over some things. This was also like maybe late 80s. And it was kind of this pixelated black and white thing. And you were a prince finding a princess. And I only ever made it to level 2. I couldn't jump under this thing. I would always
Meanwhile,
die.
She's describing Mario and talking about like, oh, it's this thing where you jump.
And the only reason why I even opened that game a second time is because in the beginning of level 2, there was a screenshot introducing level 2 that had the most amazing colors. And nothing else was in color because, you know, TVs were not color. Everything else my dad was doing was MS-DOS. So, you know, it was nothing ever had color. The actual level did not have color. But that screenshot saying level 2 is coming and a princess in a castle with colors.
Isn't that funny? Wow, that's wild. So did you find yourself playing level 1 just to get to that screenshot so
yes.
you could, like, soak up the color on the screen?
Yes,
that's
yes.
Funny.
But in terms of gameplay, to this day, I continue to try things now and then. I never made it. I just played 5 minutes.
So even
in
VR, what about VR games?
I do play VR games, but I'm not. I still struggle with the gameplay.
Mm.
I still find that I belong to a segment of people that absolutely loves computers, loves interacting with computers, wants to sit in front of a computer all day long and in VR all day and night long. But the gameplays that we have right now on offer do not address this segment that I'm part of.
Interesting. Okay. So I noticed that you were building a house in Somnium Space, which is really cool. We had Sasha from Somnium Space on the show a few weeks ago. And so I imagine that you would probably be more at home in stuff like that, like social environments, or like big screen, for example. It's like a way to watch movies in VR, you know, where you're just in VR, you're sharing virtual space, but you're not exactly like playing something, or you don't have to be dexterous, or you don't have to be fast or quick or manipulate buttons in a proper sequence or anything like that, you know?
Yes and no. I absolutely do love all those things you just said. So you're totally right there. But I also want to play games. Like, I want to be involved and reach things and find that satisfaction and get good at that skill and progress through a story. Mm-hmm. I want those things as badly as anyone else shooting zombie wants them. But for some reason, the things that these games challenge me on, the set of skills that I'm supposed to get better at, is not something that interests me. I just don't care at being challenged at how quick my fingers move so my Mario can jump right up and down. It's just not, I mean, it's challenging. I actually can't do it, but I don't find satisfaction in being challenged in that. So with that question in mind, I actually did start working on a game. I was like, okay. So If I want gameplay and I want all of those things that you all get from the games you play, I said, damn it, I want a game like that. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's out there. I'm still looking, and I love when people suggest things to me, you know, and I buy them and I try them out. But I said, okay, Andrea, why don't you write your fucking game then?
Right. Make it. Quit bitching and make
it. You can't find it. Just write it. Just do it. So I did. It's scheduled for release in like 20 years from now, because obviously.
Is it VR? It must be VR.
Yeah, it's definitely VR. Yeah.
So hold on a second. Before we go much further. So are you telling me that you don't like Beat Saber?
I do like Beat Saber, but I cannot say that it satisfies all my gaming needs.
I would also say that. Like, Beat Saber alone certainly does not satisfy my gaming needs either. But something like Beat Saber, in my opinion, is almost more of like an expression. You know, like you're connecting your body with movement, you're feeling it, you're finding that no mind point of like almost like a deep meditative state when you're in the flow. And it's not like, I don't need to progress in a story. All I need to do is feel that song and groove on it, you know? Like, I like it for the same reason that I might like dancing, you know? So I think a lot of it has to do, would come down to just like the perspective, you know? It's like, fuck the high score. Who cares how well you do? Turn no fail on and feel that song and flow with it and be like, oh, yeah, that's right. You know, like, that's the magic of Beat Saber to me. And other games like it too, you know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like perspective could definitely impact experience quite a bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think Beat Saber is amazing. And I think what I'm working on would never replace something like Beat Saber. It would simply be a totally different category. So even for me, like, one day I would say, okay, tonight I really want Beat Saber and nothing else. It's kind of like sometimes I come home and I'm like, man, I really want, I don't know, pecan ice cream. And unless I get that, I'm just not happy. And another day I might come home and want the kind of thing that I'm trying to work on.
Well, I'm really excited to see what it is that you have working on, because that's something that I always wish that I could do, is be like, man, I want a multiplayer game. I want it to be class-based. I want to do this, and no one else is making it, and so you can.
Yeah.
So I think it's a bit of a trap as well, to be honest. Like, I think you know, you see those pieces of advice on Facebook and Twitter and everything, and they say you should absolutely not start your company unless you can't live life without it, because it is going to be a million times harder than the worst job you've ever had. And I confirm that. And I think it's the same with doing a game, basically. It's like millions of developers and wannabe developers want to do their own game, and it's like like the winner's bias story. You know, we only hear about the success stories. We don't know about the millions or tens of millions that actually
failed. Seriously.
And I actually did spend a long time really thinking of these issues. So really actually trying to deal head on with the issue. Can I live without doing this? Mm-hmm. And it's been with the game, I conceptually started working on it about a year ago. And I still feel that even if I end up finishing it and there are 10 people on this planet who are gonna play it, I'm still gonna do it. I still feel like I cannot live unless I make this fucking game.
That is the thing that I love about this community right now, is that if you are involved in VR, it's because you are passionate as fuck.
Yep.
Like, you just love it and you can't live without it. Yep. So while we are in a niche, it is nice because the people who do exist within this community are like on it. Like, we're all on the same page. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves it and is just like pushing. You know, I mean, we slapped this together. We've never done a podcast before, you know, but we were like, no, we are doing this because we realized
that people need to know about VR, it just has to happen.
And we have to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I did not contribute in the way that I know that I can.
Yep.
You know, and I can't code. I can't make a game. And I thought about learning how, and I was like, okay, shit, I think I can live without that. But what I can't live without is contributing and helping. Yeah. So I think that's beautiful. And I thank everyone who's involved in the VR community for all of their tireless efforts and energy that they put into passion projects that may or may not see the light of day, or may or may not make you $1 million. Are you talking at all about the game? You know, like, do you want to share the concept, or you want to share anything about it, or do you want to kind of hold on to that for now?
I can't say so much. The one thing that I'm gonna say is that the architecture and the three-dimensional environments are gonna be part of the story. Mm. That is one of the things that, as an architect, it's not like I suffer, but so who I am is fundamentally I'm an architect, not because I worked as an architect or I can design your house or know how to design the plumbing. I'm an architect because I live through life by reading spaces and what spaces mean. That's just what I do. So when I walk into someone's house, someone's office, when I get off the plane and I'm in a new city, I'm in a new airport, the first thing I do is I look at the space. It's just my way of living life. Like, some people are sensitive to sounds, to colors, to whatever.
Wow, so spatial computing is just perfect for you.
So, yeah, exactly. So I kind of, this is kind of my talent, you know, kind of like understanding the world by deciphering spaces and everything that a space means. And if you know how to read a space, it actually tells you everything. Just the way someone dresses or talks or interacts with other people can tell you everything you need to know if you know how to kind of decode it. So I can immediately know things about money and finances, style, historical time, the way people are supposed to interact, the way people are supposed to feel here, the way people are supposed to come in and out of a space. So that's kind of like, you know, how I live life. And I do it unconsciously every moment of the day.
Do you have to be standing in the space for that? Or like, can you look at our spaceship and be like, yeah, this is going to be a good time?
I also just look at it sometimes. So this is the difficulty that I find sometimes with the games that I try. I find that there's a gameplay and a story, and then the setting, the environment is secondary. And the 3D artist gets the brief and then just does a nice environment. But I can feel deep in my bones, because I'm an architect, I'm like a spatial designer, that was an afterthought.
Mm.
And No, finding little clues inside the wall is not enough for me. That's kind of, it's not deep enough, and it's not doing the stories that the space can carry justice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like hiding a note in a cupboard is, in my book, not good enough in terms of involving the environment in the storytelling. So a lot of the experience that I've had with gaming kind of fell a little bit short when it came to this need of mine to really get involved and read the environment. I was trying to read the environment in a game and it was falling short. It was not complex enough, whereas real environments, of course, are always complex right. enough. You can write a whole book about the type of paint someone used in their bathroom, actually, uh-huh. if you like really, really get into it. So in my game, there's going to be the storyline and the environment, it's going to be central in telling that storyline. Now, we're back to the 10 people. Are there really that many people in this world who have this need that I have in getting so involved with the space and environment? And I have no idea. I don't know that answer, and I think no one does. So I know that some of my architect friends would love right. it and are psyched about what I'm trying to do.
Well, there's probably a lot of people that don't realize that they need that. Like, they don't understand that that's something that's missing for them. But once they have the experience mm-hmm. that does provide yeah. it, they won't be able to go back. You know, it'll be like, okay, now I see the true depth of the way you can do something with the environment. Now there's no way I'm going back to the note in the cupboard. But my question for you is, do you think that that is... Like do you think that that's the result of like technological difficulties? Like, you know, we can't involve everything because we just don't have, like, we can't get a frame rate if we include all that stuff, or we can't, you know, won't run smoothly, or we don't have the power. Like, do you think it has been because we haven't had the technology to do it, or do you think that it is a lack of attention to detail?
I don't think it is the technology. And actually, another thing I can tell you about my game, it's going to have almost no color and textures. It's going to be volumes and light, because that's architecture. Architecture is sculpting with light. So I'm using shapes and shadows and light.
Wow.
So it's not a technological limitation. Because another thing that I'm kind of fighting a little bit against is this kind of... flood of textures and colors and visual hype that we get in a lot of video games. So I'm trying to tone that down, but then replace it with a wealth of volume and shadow and light.
That's interesting. I mean, but they did it for you. They did it for the girl who loves the colorful screenshot in between the levels. Like, that's why it's so bright and exciting.
That's true. I guess taste can change since I was like 5 years old.
Yeah, I guess we do change. Well, so Harry, I know you're trying to get into some, what do you got? You got some, like, some current events that you want to
into? Yeah, absolutely. Well, first thing I want to get into real quick, because I just want to announce last week's Gleam giveaway winner. Mm. So for those of you out there that don't know, every week we give away a free game or accessory for VR. Of your own choosing from you know, what we have available. So in the description of the video, you'll find the link to join this, to enter this contest and get some free stuff. Because who doesn't love free stuff, right? So this week's winner is Alex Ibe. And I think I have his name right?
Ibe. eBay.
Right.
eBay.
So eBay. Congratulations to Alex. You won your stuff, and I believe, what did he pick? Space Pirate Trainer, I believe. Yeah, yep,
which is what he grabbed. You know, I'm always surprised. Like, I think it's a great choice, but Space Pirate Trainer is OG. Like,
it is, but Space Pirate Arena is coming up, right?
Oh.
So I think that's why it's on people's minds right now.
They're like, I've never played it. Arena's coming out. I should probably get it.
Totally, Space Pirate Arena is going into beta. So,
You might find that interesting. Before we dive into mm-hmm. that, have you heard of Space Pirate Arena?
I have, but I have not played it.
Well, most people have not. It is not currently available. But the cool thing about it is that it's a 1v1 shooter where you share the same space. So you're running around with quests on, shooting at each other, hiding behind.
Yeah, there's no thumbstick locomotion. No, you actually have to move.
It's all real, like you're running space, in the space. Yeah. So we could take this space here and run around and like hide shoot behind virtual objects and shoot at each other. So they're turning this space into virtual space for two people to share simultaneously, which is pretty cool. Should check that check that out. Do you have a quest?
I do have a quest.
Nice. When that comes out, that might be something that you might have fun with, because it'll basically transform the room that you're in into the play space.
Yep. It's all about about the space that you're in. Yep.
All right. So what do you got?
Totally. So I wanted to get into real quick that Oculus will be redesigning their UI here coming soon. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why Andrea's all small there on the monitor. I just fixed her. But anyway, yeah, they're going to be redesigning everything. It's going to be supposedly easier to get around. You'll be able to multitask, have multiple windows open at the same time instead of switching back and forth and have to quit an application, so on and so forth. So that'll be a really good thing. I think that's gonna help out a lot.
Huge.
Yeah, huge.
That absolutely. Example of Beat Saber right there. When like there's been multiple times where I want to like check my friends list or check and make sure I'm recording or something like that. And when you push that home button on the Quest, like application like hard stops, boom, brings up the home. It's like very disjointed. And now it'll just keep you in the VR environment. If you're playing Beat Saber, it'll just keep you in Beat Saber. And then a menu will just very like lightly and gently fill the space, and you can just
It'll be a lot easier to bounce around and do things in your Quest, which is great.
And that example there looks like there are like windows. So kind of like
you can watch a YouTube video, be browsing the internet, you know, have Oculus TV open maybe.
I didn't know I needed that, but we needed
it. Yeah, totally, totally. Well, the next thing about Oculus, what they're doing is pretty exciting, is they are joining the OpenXR revolution.
So you're going to have to explain. So you have to give me like the OpenXR for dummies here. Like,
what is that? So OpenXR is pretty much, in the simplest terms, it's pretty much a driver set, right? That people can use to make it easier to get your game on a specific platform, right? So for example, Steam is all OpenXR. A lot of the Windows MR headsets, all OpenXR. So people can program for them, and it's kind of like, you know, like your monitor, you don't have to install monitor drivers, right? It's just a monitor, right? It's kind of the same with this. It makes your HMD, your head-mounted display, a VR monitor, right? I mean, it's kind of the same as if you were grabbing any other head-mounted display. So people don't have to program specifically for the Oculus API.
I see.
Right? They can put out their game. It will work within all of the different headsets, which is huge.
Andrea, does this affect you?
Yes.
In what way?
Well, my understanding of this is that it's going to make it easier for us to develop for multiple platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what I just got from that.
And it has been an absolute nightmare as indie developers to attempt to develop for multiple platforms. It has just been like,
it's
I have no
like
words to describe
writing
it.
Apps
I'm going to shed
Apple
a tear.
Yeah, it's like writing an app for Apple iOS versus Android. You got to write your program twice.
I read a tweet that somebody wrote that said something along the lines of like, this would affect me if I didn't already do all the work that I needed to do ahead of time. Like, I already learned everything. Like, I learned how to do it to that one and that one and that one. So like, this doesn't help me much because I already
but it'll cut down on time though that these developers need to put into everything, right? Like half the time pretty much. I mean, they only have to develop for the one API now instead of doing two.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's great. It just means more content for all of us.
Yeah,
which is what we all want.
Faster.
Exactly. Exactly. The next thing I wanted to get into real quick is that Half-Life is just on my brain. Sorry. is that Oculus has apparently leaked a headset. Now, the image that's up on the display does not signify the actual leaked headset. These are the half-domed prototypes. But there was an article that was leaked that had Oculus Del Mar in it about developing for it, which means, you know, this could be the next generation Quest, and they're trying to get everything working now, you know, letting developers kind of mess with it. So it's just interesting, right? We know that the successors to these hardware pieces are coming, but it's good to actually see
some kind
proof
of evidence
in the background. So, you know, no one has to worry about, you know, Quest 2 coming out tomorrow or anything.
Right.
You know, we still have multiple years
Well, and there's a lot of people that say that it won't be Quest 2. Like, Andre, do you have any speculation as to what they're working on? What do you think's coming?
I think it will have... I feel like it will have a feature that is going to be wild, but I don't know what that is. I feel like they have something up their sleeve. I don't think they're going to do the mistake HTC Vive is doing right now in coming up with a new thing every week that no one really knows what's going on anymore. So I trust that if something is coming out, it's not going to be a slightly better Quest or 30% higher resolution or faster processor. I think it's going to have like that one thing that's really going to be wow. Having said that, I really hope to God they're not going to release anytime soon, because as developers, we're also totally overwhelmed by the breadth of this ecosystem. And I know from the consumer side, it might feel like a good thing because you have choice, and hey, choice is always good, but it's killing us. It is killing us. And it is the side that consumers don't really see. So consumers see, okay, I have choice, but hey, I have choice in hardware. I don't have my choice in software, and you know, this chicken and egg issue. But for a developer, we have to learn a new SDK for every headset, and not even within the same producer are the headsets compatible with each other, the SDKs. So you typically tend to get a new SDK for every headset. So it is a nightmare. To add to that, which actually the thing that makes it even worse than the iOS Android analogy is the fact that we develop with Unity or Unreal, which is not even a software that is released by the company that gives you the SDK. So if you do an Android app, you can use Android Studio, you know, so it, at least it's by the same company. The tool is by the same company that produces the end software. So we don't have to deal with just with updates and different SDKs. We have to deal with Unity and Unity updates and syncing that with the SDKs and then plugins that by third parties. And it's, I mean, honestly, it's a disaster. I think it's the central reason why it's going so badly financially, to be honest.
I think in the future, Oculus will have, you know, they're making their own operating system, right? They don't want to be tied to Android, and for good reason, right? They want their own thing, and I feel like that will probably come with their own sets of tools down the line, right? Now, that doesn't help with going between Steam VR headsets and Oculus headsets, but, you know, we're going in that direction. So, hopefully, you know, we make it as easy as possible for developers to give us the content that we want.
The next big push is going to be eye tracking. Eye tracking is like
huge.
Huge. It is going to,
because of foveated rendering.
Of course is huge. That's just performance wise. But honestly, for me, it's about the social aspect. If you're in VR with someone and I'm like looking and like you start saying something that just like sounds ridiculous to me, and I like give Skiva a couple looks, like all of that will translate with eye tracking. Like there's so much communication and connection that happens with the movement of these guys right here. And Oculus currently does not have an eye tracking solution. So I would not be surprised if the next headset focuses primarily on bringing eye tracking to the standalone device in a way that connects us more with social aspects. Maybe less performance-based stuff and more like when I look at you, I look at you. Because Horizons is coming and they're like basically going to try to push Horizons as like Facebook 2.0. And eye tracking is going to be the way that we sell some of these people who are resisting, you know, they're like, I don't know, it feels like a goofy avatar, like doesn't look like me, you know, but then when the eyes connect, that's a big deal. So if I had to take a guess at what that thing is, I would say eye tracking with the standalone.
I'd say eye tracking with the standalone, but I personally think that it's going to be full AR pass through too. I mean, this is my guess,
which would be cool.
Yeah.
I think that'd be awesome.
Oh, it would be amazing. And absolutely. It'd be totally amazing.
So, I mean, could you not, like, make it, like, a quest just with those things? Yeah. Like, for a developer, like, would that crush you if it was just a quest with extra bells and whistles? Or, like, would you have to learn that SDK again?
If it was a quest SDK with some added functionality, yeah, it would be fine. We would just look up the new metas they've added, the new stuff we can call. But... yeah, I totally agree with eye tracking. That's one of my biggest beef that I have with social VR. It's very hard to know what's going on sometimes.
Yes.
You see the
sound is
like
also confusing.
Moving around.
Yeah, you don't know what
anyone's
thinking.
Sometimes I don't even know who's talking to me. Like, you know, there's like 5-6 people. Like, I don't know. He's over there. Is he talking to me? Is he talking to the dude on my right, on my left? Because, you know, their heads are blinking, so okay, they're talking, but it's...
And you know what's funny? We've like found a way to fill the gap in VR by using our hands. I've had so many people come in and be like, hey, how's it going, man? like use the two hands and like point at you while they're talking to you. But eye tracking would be much better.
It would. So the next thing up is just a great thing for the VR community, and it shows how much that VR is really getting out there to the mainstream, right? That Beat Saber sold 2 million copies.
That's
10 million
insane.
Songs. Wow. Like 2 million. That means we're getting there, man. We are getting there.
I mean, how many people bought it 2 or 3 times, though?
True.
No. Like, I have 2 copies myself.
Yeah.
And I'm like trying not to get the third. Like, we do the family share on Steam, so I can access his stuff, and he has Beat Saber on Steam, but I don't. And so far, it's worked out pretty well. But one of these days, it's going to come along when I'm going to need a copy of that for Steam, and I hope I don't have to pay out of pocket for it, because buying a game 3 times, 3
yeah,
platforms.
Definitely. It's, yeah, I mean, that's one of those games that's kind of like, you know, how many times have we bought the original Super Mario Brothers and stuff like that, right? Because it keeps coming out for everything.
I know.
You know, so you keep buying it, but that's a sign of a good game, and that's why Oculus bought this.
Digressing, congratulations to Beat Saber and to the VR community as a whole, because this is definitely a win.
Yes.
2 million of anything is badass.
Yep.
You know, so...
Exactly.
I think
that's
fantastic.
Big. That's very big. I think so too. The other thing I wanted to put in real quick, and this is the last of the news stories, is that Echo VR is coming to the Quest soon. We haven't seen any actual footage of it from the Quest. They're still releasing Rift S footage, which makes me a little nervous. But I mean, it's still a big deal. I think this game is going to be absolutely huge. This is one of the coolest virtual sports I've ever witnessed. You know what I mean? Floating around in zero G, whipping discs, trying to get them into the goal, passing them to your friends, floating around. It's just amazing. I feel like this is the next sport. You know, not even esports.
This is
legit stuff. And I think when Quest gets this, the player base is instantly going to shoot up. You're not going to have, like right now, you go in and you got to wait 15 minutes to get into a game.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
This game is so good.
Yeah. I just played it for the first time about a week ago, and it is awesome. It is good. It is hard as hell.
Yeah.
Like, it
really is
no joke. There's a learning curve for sure. And it is, you're going to get your ass kicked for a while. And I'm comfortable with that. I have no problem losing when I'm learning something new. We did, to your point that you just made, we kept queuing up in a lobby with these guys who were like level 500 or whatever.
Yeah, they were really good.
And they were dominating us. And then we get into another game and it's the same fucking squad. And then another game is the same fucking squad. And we're like,
because there's a lot of people playing, right?
Right?
And that's part of the problem with all multiplayer VR stuff, and especially something as good as Echo Arena VR. I mean, this is just going to come out and it's going to rock people's world, I think.
Yep.
You know, and I'm really, really excited about it, because I really do feel like this is a legit thing.
And
you know,
and this is so lacking on the Oculus Quest. Like,
it really is.
There needs to be that super addictive, highly competitive / cooperative experience that multiple people can go into together. Yeah. So when you hit up your friends, you're like, hey, what are you doing? Nothing sweet. Let's fucking get on Echo and like let's score some goals. And like, you do that with your homies. Like, there's nothing on the Quest that you can do that with right now.
Yeah, it's really
nothing.
Sad. Yeah.
Which is insane, because it's been out for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought for sure that there would be, I mean, okay, Hyper Dash, right? That just came out.
And but it's not. It didn't even come out. It's not even out. It's, you know, you can sideload it.
But there's something, you know. Yeah. So it's taken a long time to get here. Yeah. But I think these are the experiences that are really going to become system sellers. Yeah. Like we think the Quest is popular now. Wait until like you're the one friend in your group of friends who's not playing Echo Arena.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's over.
Yeah. That's big. It's just big for VR, and I really hope you know gain some traction. You know what else is big for VR? Obviously, is Half-Life Alyx. I just wanted to throw that out there real quick because it's just gonna be a game changer. And you know, and talking to your point, especially you know the spatial stuff, right? You go into this game, and you can move things around on the shelves, and it's more like real life than anything we've seen before. So so we won't get too much into Half-Life because we're doing an episode you know about Half-Life.
Well, we just did one.
Right, we just did one. Exactly. So anyway, I think what we should do now is I think we should get into some of these tweets. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So I mentioned earlier in the show I'm a huge fan of Andrea's tweets. She, you know, this show is called Between Realities for a reason. It's because we often look at the XR world from a philosophical perspective. In fact, this conversation was birthed because, or this podcast was birthed out of us hanging out and like having these conversations and then eventually being like, okay, hold on, like, this is good shit. Like, this is really good. Like, we were like talking about some really, really profound stuff. And the fact that we're able to find the connection in the XR world, I think is super, super fascinating. And there hasn't been anyone that has done this quite like Andrea that I have found on Twitter yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you have like some good philosopher buddies on Twitter who can hang with you, or are you like, are you the juggernaut right now?
Oh my God. No, I would definitely not consider myself that. Kent Bai and sometimes get into some long Twitter threads about some pretty kooky stuff in a good way.
He's a hard-working dude.
He is. Kent Bai is amazing.
I saw him at really OC6, and that dude was hitting the pavement. Like, yeah. Did not stop. I saw him in every room of every hotel with a microphone in somebody's face.
Yes, like, go check out Voices of VR. That's Kent Bai's podcast, and it is phenomenal.
He is actually the first person to leave a comment on a Between Reality show, which was like a huge honor. Like, we just went live, like, premiere, go, Kent Bai, first in the chat. Congrats, guys, blah, blah, blah. We were like, dude, so awesome. He's the man. We love him.
Absolutely. But so this first tweet, do you want to read it for anyone else?
Yep, absolutely. So this, I think, does kind of relate a lot to the world that we're living in right now with all this quarantine and social distancing bullshit. But you have a tweet that's that goes like this. Will this sudden reliance on virtual spaces and communication wake us up to their potential or make everyone acutely aware of the importance of physical bodies? I'll let you elaborate a little bit on what you meant by that tweet, and then we'll parlay.
Right. So when it comes to the work that I do, like the more theoretical work that I try to do in VR, I try to walk a thin line between making general statements and acknowledging that things are actually quite subtle and quite complicated and complex in many ways. So so in this tweet, I'm juxtaposing two things that seem very, very different. So on one hand is, okay, we're relying on our physical bodies, and this is something that belongs to physical reality. And when we jump into VR, is this fantasy land that's completely divorced from physical reality and from our physical body. So it seems like there is this huge separation between these two things. And I think that's actually a false dichotomy. I think our physical bodies are the thing that anchors us into the world, regardless of which world we're in. So the way we perceive things, the way we look at things, the way we experience ourselves comes from being in a body, feeling ourselves in a body.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of why I wrote that tweet actually was to, as a response to a lot of people I see on, mostly on LinkedIn, someone on Twitter too, but mostly on LinkedIn, there's been this flood of, oh my God, this is the big moment for VR. It's like, now we can't be with each other anymore, so let's forget about where we are and our bodies and the room we're in, and let's just escape into virtual reality. And we need a more subtle approach to this. We need to acknowledge also the place where we actually are and the physical body. And we're back to two things you mentioned earlier, Beat Saber and this new game where you transform the actual room that you're in and the actual piece of furniture that you're in into things that are part of the gameplay. So we see that even the most successful examples of VR applications actually take into account somehow where you actually are and how it feels to be in your actual physical body. It's not this cut, hey, now you are here in a body, now you are like in this dream world. So I think we need to become more sophisticated about how we connect these things rather than see black and white.
Mm-hmm. So when we talk about like the physical reality, the one that we share here, it's like, this is a sensory perception reality. Like, this whole thing is built out of a culmination of our sensory perception. You know, like what I see, what I can hear, what my nerves tell me exists in this room. And then our brains take all that information, turn it into a nice package and present it to us as reality. And then we just, enjoy it.
We accept it.
We just do whatever we want with it. And then we kind of like exist within that. Have you ever, do you know the allegory of the cave? The Plato and Socrates allegory of the cave?
Yes.
That's what I think about. You know, it's like they're sitting in the cave looking at the shadows, like talking about the shadows. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a this and that's a that. And they don't see that that's like actually a real thing way back there. Like they're just closed in to their sensory perception reality. So VR, the way it works now, is just that. It's a manipulation of your senses, at least as much as we can, in a very rudimentary way, by flashing a light over your eyeballs and trying to get it as close to the refresh rate of the human eyeball as possible, and putting headphones over your ear and simulating three-dimensional space, you know? So you've also tweeted about like haptic response and like finding a way to kind of like bridge that one. And to me, that's just another sense. That's just really trying to accurately simulate the senses that your nerves, the information that your nerves send to your brain. So When I think about all of this, and I think about like what you're saying with this tweet, and then I start to think about stuff like dreams, you know, like a dream is a reality that you experience that is happening entirely internally and is reflective of the sensory perception reality that we exist in every day. But you're not really seeing anything, and you're not really hearing anything, and you're not really feeling anything, yet your brain basically tells you you are. You know, and for all intents and purposes, you are. You are actually experiencing that thing. So this, I find it, I wonder where we can find that middle ground, you know, because I agree with you. It does need to be a more elegant approach, you know, to getting in and out of that. And honestly, you were reminding me of AR applications when you were talking about that. I feel like AR would really help kind of accomplish that goal. But you know, I think about like the way we perceive stuff when we dream and how it's like reflective of sensory perception, but it isn't sensory perception. And I wonder if we can get to a place like that with VR.
The way I think about this, I feel like before answering that, I feel like taking a small step back to clarify kind of where I'm coming from in terms of where I position myself with my thinking. So I take almost all of my philosophical inspiration for what's called continental philosophy. So I'm sure you know this analytical philosophy, which is practiced mostly in kind of the Anglo-Saxon world, and the old world in Europe, like the French, the Germans, they kind of developed continental philosophy. And that's more kind of based on metaphysics, whereas analytical is more based on kind of developing and analyzing types of logic and things like that. And within continental philosophy, I am a big fan of what's called phenomenology. And phenomenology is kind of a European tradition that believes that you, and a parenthesis, embodiment, understanding of embodiment within phenomenology. And this tradition believes that we're hardware and we have a software, and then we get input, sensory input that comes into this hardware that runs a certain software. So if you go into VR, like in the real world, you get certain kind of input, and if you go into VR, you get another kind of input, but it's the input comes into the same kind of software that is kind of packed in this hardware.
I see.
Phenomenology proposes that the input is not completely separate than the software. The input actually, the type of input actually define the software. So we are who we are in terms of our software. The way we're constructed, we think about ourselves and we think about the world, and even like we're able to do logical and abstract kind of operations in our mind because we see in a certain way and certain things, because we hear in a certain way and certain things, because we connect what we hear and what we feel and what we see in particular ways.
Mm-hmm.
So it proposes a much, much tighter and more sophisticated relationship between the sensory things that we get and the world outside and the software that we run. So in my work, I try to take this idea and say, okay, what does this mean for VR? And for me, what it means is that if the physical reality gives you a certain kind of input and that kind of affects your software, it means that when you go into VR and you change the type of input, which we can do in VR, you change the input, not just by having the eye see something else, but maybe having the eye see in different ways. Maybe you can see from 10 meters above the ground, or you can see with your back, or you can hear with your feet, and there's been tons of experiment in this direction. So if you change the type of input, and phenomenology is right, you will in time end up changing the software. You will in time end up changing the way we think.
Of course.
And how we think about who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's the background of my personal interest in VR and philosophy. And that's also kind of the thing that I'm trying to prove or disprove and kind of run after in my own experiments.
You know, here's something that I've always loved to kind of play with, and I've been thinking about this for years, but it's like, I mentioned earlier that the reality that we share is built primarily out of 5 sensory perception organs, and of course, we do perceive things outside of our sensory perception organs, I think, I've experienced anyway, but we can share that for later. But I always like play around with the idea of like, is there something flying around in this room right now that I don't have the sensory perception organ for, you know? And if I did, in what way would that change the way that I perceive reality as a whole? You know, do you think that like we are almost like bound, right? Like maybe like our sensory perception body is almost like a prison that keeps us locked into the 5 sensory perception organ reality, but maybe there's just like all kinds of shit flying around in this room right now that I don't have the ear for, or
right, you can't perceive that,
right.
that dimension, or
right.
that
right, and you know, is our work in VR going to kind of like start to claw at that door a little bit, you know, like do you think that this could possibly swing the door open and you know, we can start experiencing stuff way outside of anything that we're used to perceiving?
Yes, I do believe that. And the one point that I want to make, that's the most important point for me and for my entire work, is I want for people to understand that the moment we open that door, even 1 or 2 inches, the moment we get a glimpse of that something else, it's going to start to change us. So you are not going to be the same you the moment you have access to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna change us to an extent that we can't really imagine. Because right now, when we think of maybe these invisible things that might be in this room with us, we think in terms of kind of like a sci-fi movie, or you put these, I don't know, mixed reality glasses on and you kind of see it. And I think that's not correct. It's not going to be you. You will become, the moment you have access to that through some kind of sensory input that you do not possess right now, you will be transformed into something else that you cannot imagine right now. So in my very, very personal interest in VR, and this goes beyond what my company does, beyond to some extent the game and everything else, is to figure out to what extent VR is capable of taking me to a place where I'm not Andrea anymore, where after half an hour or 1 hour in a certain VR experience, I stop experiencing that as Andrea, and I become to experience it as someone else or something else. And to me, this is, I don't want to call it liberation, because liberation has a positive connotation, and I think that what I'm saying could be either positive or negative or neutral.
Yeah,
I don't want
no
to
idea.
Put I don't want to put connotations onto it, mm-hmm. but it's gonna be a door towards things that we've never necessarily had access to, only maybe kind of like if you go into a spiritual kind of realm. And to me, that's having that potentially be induced through technology, it's a major, major area of interest.
Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you. I agree. And I'm really glad that you mentioned spirituality too, because I feel like that there is a spiritual realm that exists somewhere there. And for a lot of people, myself included in these, my interest in philosophy and in a lot of these topics that we're discussing did come from having spiritual experiences, you know, very profound experiences through the use of medicine. So it's like once I, you know, have had experiences like that, you know, kind of like peek behind the curtain a little bit, you come back and you're like,
you're not the same. Yeah.
Okay, you're not the same. And I am not the same. Yeah. I am not the person who I was before I had those medicinal spiritual experiences. So I feel like you're hitting the nail right on the head. It's like the more that people, I mean, once those tools become available, once that information becomes available, it like completely will rock the core of what it means to be human, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I think humanity itself will be challenged through the things that are unveiled as this progresses.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll move on to the next tweet, which is related. I feel like it has a spot in this conversation. And this is a tweet of yours, Andrea, that says, I believe that physical reality is overrated and that humans can create and live across multiple realities. We are also destroying nature and cutting ties with the things that ground us. Are VR and the multiverse part of the final proof that we are too smart for our own good? Can you elaborate on that?
That's a good one.
Thank you. So this is, it's back to walking that thin line between this black and white dichotomy between physical reality and body and the dream world of VR. And the first, the simplistic approach is to say, we're obviously destroying nature. Obviously, we do not have the same relationship to plants and trees and leaves and water and this kind of, you know, we used to believe they're part of gods and there was like incantation to them and this special relationship. We've lost that and we've progressed to a point where we're destroying it.
Mm-hmm.
So the simplistic approach would be to say, look, VR is kind of the last step maybe in this complete separation between what is physical and what is our own man-made dream world that doesn't give a shit about trees and water and birds.
Mm-hmm.
And we have got to this point where we've developed this technology and We are trying to minimize our physical needs, and we are satisfying our spiritual, even social needs in this virtual world that is independent from actual nature. And I think if you push it one step further, is like, okay, is this true? Like it feels like a coherent argument, right? It feels like a clear argument. Okay, you say it, I say it, I say it to myself, okay, I buy it. And then I have to say, okay, wait a second. Is there more to it? Or are we falling into this black and white dichotomy, this need we have, which is an understandable need because the world is so fucking complicated. We have a need to clarify it. And at some point we do need, hey, let's just figure out what's good and what's bad. Let's figure out what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another thing you learn from philosophy, actually. You learn to make a dance. So this is kind of this Hegelian dialectic, which is a dance between this need to clarify and draw borders between things, and then a second wave that needs to come after that to ask the question, but is it really so? Or is there more depth to it? Are we missing something?
Yeah,
So my hope, actually, I think what's been happening to me and what I was implying with my earlier, the other tweet you mentioned, was that people will go into VR and we'll start to discover more and more ways in which the body matters, in which tiny, tiny things about the body, tiny, tiny details that you've never noticed before, that you never knew you had, maybe, start to become important in VR. You start to miss them. You start to feel something is wrong. You start to kind of have a sense of, wait a minute. It's the same. I think it's the same phenomenon that happens when with illness. So when we are healthy, we tend not to think of our bodies and the tiny parts that make up our bodies. So right now I'm deep into this conversation with you, and the only thing that's in the focus of my mind is what we're saying, talking to each other, and I kind of have this whole feeling of the conversation and of each of you.
Mm-hmm.
I do not focus my mind on the details. I do not focus on the way my tongue moves and the muscles in my cheeks move. But the moment something was wrong with one of those muscles, that would become at the forefront,
right,
of everything. And it would, for me, it will kind of dominate the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people will start to notice connections between how we think and how we walk and how we see and how we process things that have the body at the center,
mm-hmm,
that have the physicality of the body,
mm-hmm,
at the center of that.
Mm-hmm.
And VR is going to start to emphasize this.
Right.
So if there are areas where we thought, well, the body is either sick or healthy, but me, who I am, how I think, the way I think is independent from the body is actually false. It's actually brought by this dualism that we've been flooded with in the past 400 or 500 years, if not more, pushing apart the physical from the mental.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be actually a great gain for our physical reality life. To go back and relearn the importance of the physical body and the connection, even for who we are and for how we think.
Are you a fan of the show Black Mirror?
Yes.
So I was talking about dreams earlier, and I saw this movie a bunch of years ago called Waking Life, which it talks about a lot of different philosophical things, but at its core, that's the word I was looking for, it is about lucid dreaming. It's about understanding that dreams, to the neurological processes in your brain that determine what is real and what's not real, there is no difference between a sensory perception experience like this one or dreaming something to your brain. Of course there's a difference, but when your brain is taking the information, it deciphers that as reality. So in Black Mirror, the way that they have perceived VR to function in the future is that little like button. it's like a little button that you put on your temple, and 3, 2, 1, and you're out. And like, I don't know, I imagine it sends electrical impulses or electrical signals through your brain that control your impulses and like change your brain into perceiving something entirely different. Mm-hmm. So if your brain is being fed all of the information that it needs to build a reality that looks and feels real, like the Matrix or Black Mirror, do you think that the body will still have the same, like, you know, importance?
And let me add to that a little bit, right? So as technology improves and as we look at what's happening in the industry, there's a huge push on brain interfacing. There was just a recent interview with Gabe Newell of Valve Corporation, and you know, he spends most of his time on brain interfacing. I think we'll probably get to a point before we die that we'll get to that type of Black Mirror scenario. Where we have hardware that's reading and writing to our brain that will further separate us from our bodies, right? Because it'll be more like a dream state,
right?
Where you're experiencing these things almost in like a dream state, mm-hmm. and you will only, your body will only feel the things that it's told to feel,
right?
Right. So that will even more separate us from our physical bodies.
So there's something really important that I have to say. When we dream, regardless of whether it's a regular dream or a lucid dream, we still dream. What we dream are fragments that are maybe transformed and interpreted, but they still are fragments from things we could have done in the real life.
Yes.
So, for example, like I had a lucid dream that was kind of like a recurring one for a while when I was swimming in water, and everything about what was happening to me in the dream in water very much had to do with what my actual body would have done in the water, you know, like I was perceiving the water and this was water and air and maybe I was drowning and I was trying to move, and the dream was responding the way it would have responded if I had an actual body. Mm-hmm. So this idea that you have a dream that's completely separate from reality, I think it's, again, false. The dream is 100% inspired by what you live through as a waking person,
right,
in your actual body. I mean, even the fact that we have a vertical orientation, right? We always feel a ground plane, and we have a vertical orientation that's perpendicular to this ground plane, right? So let's take this very simple fact. And this appears in every scenario I've seen in Black Mirror. It appears in every dream we have, right? We have this orientation.
Yep.
We are perpendicular, vertical, and perpendicular to the ground plane.
Mm-hmm.
In every single dream, it's still in almost every single VR experience, of course, unless you're like flying or floating. But this is fundamentally something your brain has learned because of the body.
Yeah.
The body has taught your brain this. So if you are separating the body from the brain, what are you going to do? You have two choices. You either continue to reinforce what your physical body, which is now gone, but for some reason you continue to reinforce the stuff you learned through the deceased physical body, yeah, like this vertical orientation and many, many other things. Or, and this is the only story actually that everyone keeps telling us, right? Everyone keeps showing us in every Hollywood movie. It shows the cut between the brain and the body, the matrix, right? The body is discarded, but somehow it still maintains things that were only learned to that dead body.
Mm-hmm.
And the more interesting path that I wish we could see more and more people exploring, particularly in VR, is to say, okay, we don't have a physical body, but we can send input to the brain. Let's rewrite those things. Let's teach our brain different things. We don't have to be stuck at perpendicular angle,
right,
to the horizontal plane.
It's just like impossible to fathom. Like we cannot fathom that.
And then we're back to what I was saying earlier, phenomenology, which is kind of the backbone of my thinking. Phenomenology says that the type of input you get defines your software. The type of input you get, including this verticality, is not just input, actually determine your software. It determined the way you're thinking.
So do you think that brain interfacing and gaming will actually kind of change you if it gets good enough?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. That's intense. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Because I'm just really upset at all these even brilliant producers like people in Black Mirror, and I feel they're not conceptualizing this enough and they're not pushing this enough.
Well, like, what could you possibly do? Like, it has to be relatable. Like, and how can we create something that's consumable that is completely outside of something that we relate to?
Well, if you start by, let's say, spending half an hour a day in VR in an avatar that does not respond to the horizontal nature of the plane, the way your physical body does, you will start to feel some pretty weird changes happening to you very fast. You're like, holy shit, something
pretty sure
is
that causes VR motion sickness.
Not necessarily. Well, it depends how you do it.
Yeah.
But it's happening. So you get to the point where you take your headset off and you need a few seconds to kind of get back to this kind of reality. Mm-hmm. But because of the plasticity of our brain, things do happen very, very fast. We can't make steps in this direction that are too much, too far, just because of what you said, just because we can't really imagine it. Mm-hmm. So the only thing I can think of is to do tiny little step, like choose one thing and then push it to an area that would be outside the possibilities of your physical body, and practice living life, doing something in VR outside that area of possibility that you have in physical reality, and don't focus on it, like do something else, chat with your friends, watch a movie, whatever, but you will start to feel strange things happening.
Yeah, and I can't even wrap my head around it. Like, it is insane to think that we might be able to use this technology to, like, just rewrite reality from the ground up.
Well, yeah, and I mean, they're rewriting things in brains already, right? They're taking people that suffer from seizures and they're trying to use brain interfacing right now to rewrite how that part of the brain works to stop those seizures. There's, in our lifetime, we're going to see some really wild shit.
I know Kung Fu.
I know Kung Fu. Exactly. Well, let's pop in. Maybe we can pop into this third tweet. We're running
Let's do tweet number three. I had three of your tweets set aside, so we'll talk about them. This one's great. All right. Andrea. Why all realities are... Oh, so this is actually... Let me preface this. This is actually a response of yours to someone else's tweet. You were responding to someone and you were basically confirming that this is why all realities are equally real and equally unreal. It's a historian's perspective. Cognitive scientists make similar claims about the highly subjective nature of sensory input and cognition. Objective reality is so out of reach, it's the least real thing around. So I feel like this is the next logical step in this conversation, right? Because we've been talking about the importance of the physical body and, like, the importance of this reality. But then here we basically say that, like, nothing is real and everything is as real as it is unreal. And, like, it, you know, like, I don't know. What, you take it from here.
So there's behind the intention in that tweet are two things. One, which is something I think I understand, and something that I'm 100% sure I do not understand. So the thing I think I understand is also what you said earlier. So it's for sure that there are things in this room right now that we can't see. There are things going on that we just can't comprehend. Mm-hmm. And we, the thing I was replying to, it was a tweet about how history is constructed. And of course, the immediate answer to this statement is, well, that's kind of, you know, kind of like an academic twist and overreaction, because we really do know what happened right. 50 years ago. Right?
There's 100 people who all said that that thing happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can read something and everything. But the more you study history, the more you've run into examples of history that was rewritten because of many reasons. And that person was saying something like, basically, you go into studying history because of your love of facts. You want to know what happened. And then after you finish your PhD in history, you realize that you're in love with the fact that you actually don't really know anything for sure. And it's the same in all kind of sciences. The more you get into it, the more you realize that there are layers and layers and layers of interpretation.
One of the things I've always loved about science, by the way, to interject quickly, is that I feel like science in a lot of ways is like a religion of naming stuff and mm-hmm. talking about it, the way it relates to the other things. But mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we really don't know any more about it. Like, we know how it relates to this other thing, but when you talk about like the intrinsic, like the true essence of the thing, we don't have that information. All we have is, how is it different from that? And how is it different from that? And let's name the thing within that. And let's name that, and let's name the thing that it's bouncing off of too. So it's like really just like categorizing and naming the fuck out of everything mm-hmm. and trying to understand it. But at the end of the day, all we have is the relationships, and we don't have the true essence and the nature of that thing.
Right. But we live in a society that only functions because we have these norms, and we all agree upon meanings and upon histories mm-hmm. and upon what we know and what we don't know, because right. otherwise we would go crazy.
Yeah.
If we all lived life questioning everything and asking, what does this mean? Did this really happen? We would just go crazy.
Seriously.
We just can't do it. So then we have society, right, that fixes meaning for us and fixes all of these uncertainties for us. And that cuts both ways, right? It's good because it grounds us and it makes life possible for us. And it's bad because the moment it fixes meaning and history and interpretation, it fixes it in a way that might be better for some social groups than some others. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the big struggle we're dealing with. But there's going back to phenomenology and the idea that our software is defined by the input. There's something related to this whole story of meaning and everything. So if we go and say everything is a matter of interpretation and putting a label on it and putting talking about it in terms of reference points, right? Like history is, if you move the reference point and the interpretation, everything kind of blows up. And then on top of that, we realize we only have these 5 very limited senses, so there's obviously even more shit around us. Everything is in flux, everything is fluid, we don't really know anything. And here comes a big but, that is the part that I said, I know for sure that I don't understand. If everything is in flux, if we don't know anything, if even our logic and the way we think, our software is determined by our inputs, right, which can change, then what about science? Why are we able to come up with theories and mathematics and formulas that seem to work? There's this famous essay in I think it was like late 1800s or early 1900s or something. Maybe not that old. Maybe I'm overreacting. But it's called Notes on the Unreasonable Efficiency of Mathematics. Like, why why does mathematics works? Like, why do we have this ability to figure out this logic that just seemed to work?
You know, to me,
you know what I mean?
To me, I think
what is that?
I feel like that's like recognizing patterns, you know, like, mm-hmm. like there's patterns that exist in nature. Like if you look at a leaf, for example, and you zoom in on it, you'll see it's a, you know, a cell that multiplies a bunch of times in a row, or there's like the, what do they call it?
Everything is like the Fibonacci sequence.
Fibonacci sequence, you know, like mm-hmm. you see that everywhere. To me, like that's what that is. Like it's like the math and stuff makes sense because like there's things in nature that have these like beautiful, perfect, symmetrical, mm-hmm. like they just work. You know, it's like, you know, the leaf, the branch goes out and the leaves come out all at the same angle mm-hmm. and it all looks perfect, you know? However, those leaves aren't perfect. Right? Like we recognize the patterns, but we do see, oh, well, this leaf is not exact. You know, this one's a little smaller on this side than that one. So like they are represented, like that pattern is represented in nature, but that pattern isn't nature.
Yeah.
You know, like that pattern exists on a higher level of reality than the things that are pulling from it. You know, so it's like when I see something like numbers and like math, I will like default to something like pi. You know, it's like, okay, mm-hmm. well, pi isn't perfect. You know, what do you mean you have a number that goes on forever? Like that yeah. does not compute. So everything else works, but that's the leaf that's kind yeah. of.
And we blindly that. Trust math as well for a lot of things. Like look at quantum physics. You know, we have figured out a lot of things that are just bananas in quantum physics. And the math tells us that things work in certain ways that are really unfathomable mm-hmm. to us. You know, being able to, you know, atoms, you know, and things teleporting and being able to control things from very,
time
very
relativity.
Long distance. Yeah. It's just wild, right? And the math works, you know, for the things that we can't see, we use it as a guideline. And it is weird that mm-hmm. it always does seem to work.
Does any of that land?
Yeah. I mean, these are huge questions for me that I do not have any
yeah.
clean answers for.
No.
Mm-hmm. And I don't, it's also kind of completely confusing to me as to why we can do this math. Like why, if the math is some kind of system of patterns that's underlying everything in nature,
mm-hmm.
why in the world can we do it? Like it just kind of doesn't make any evolutionary sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit into what we were talking about earlier. It doesn't fit into the fact that we are so our brains are so they have this plasticity and
mm-hmm.
they're affected by all of this input, you know. It just kind of, it seems like there are two stories that just don't really fit nicely together. At least I cannot put
mm-hmm.
them together.
Joe, have you ever seen Joe? I assume you've seen Joe Rogan's podcast. Have you seen it?
Yes.
It's so good. He's like a huge inspiration
yeah.
for me. I love Joe Rogan. But he has a guy on his show and they talk about like the evolution of like early human primates to what we see today. And there is a theory that I'll run by you and I'd love to get your thoughts on that it came from the consumption, like the continuous consumption of like the magic mushrooms and stuff that were growing on like fertilizer and like manure and shit back in the day. So there's all these like hunter gatherer type primates who are just like foraging, like rummaging, looking for shit to eat all the time. And as they're cruising through, they see some mushrooms growing out of a pile of shit sitting there, pick them up, toss them in and keep going. And then 45 minutes later, they're downloading the fucking Fibonacci sequence from the universe.
Yeah.
Like seeing all these patterns and like start to feel stuff like courage and you know, and like
yeah.
all these human things.
The generations
yeah.
and generations
and so
of people doing
millions
this.
And millions and millions of primates over years and years and years and years continuously consuming mushrooms with hallucinogenic effect ended up producing offspring that like retained the knowledge, and they got to a point where they started to look like us and started to like do math and use
mm-hmm.
the sound vibrations and eloquent patterns to transmit our thoughts from one brain to another.
It's a really
know?
Interesting
it's like,
theory.
I'm just using
sure.
a sound
mm-hmm.
wave that you're telling me that you understand, you know, like this is super, super complex shit. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, what do you think about that? Do you think that that might could possibly be a contributing factor?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the whole, so I know there's a big community that believes that hallucinogens are giving us access to this pattern, to this extra something.
Yeah.
And I'm still struggling making the leap of faith that there is that extra something there.
Mm-hmm.
And then because that's not the only leap of faith you have to make, right? The second leap of faith that you have to make is, okay, and why do I have access to this? And what is this? And then the story that, okay, there's a bigger thing there, which I'm still, yeah, not sure about. And then you say, oh, but there's this mushroom, which is this magic plant, and you take it and it gives you access to that thing. It sounds amazing, but doesn't it sound too good to be true?
For sure.
I don't know. I don't. I'm not sure that
I mean,
it is. I mean, you look at
plants. It sounds too good.
Well, we're talking about just mushrooms, right? What about when you look at what about when you look at things like DMT that are produced in some types of plants, right? That's also produced in our pineal gland when we die when we're born and when we die. The only two times it's produced, right? And that stuff is found in nature. It can be then taken and manipulated like they do in countries like Peru and make ayahuasca and things like that.
Right.
So some of these things I feel like have a link to them.
Well, that's... a lot of it's like, isn't it like, it's just like your brain communicating with itself in a way that it doesn't normally do. You know,
right.
It's like all of a sudden this guy is talking to that guy.
Yeah.
And that never happens. You know, so like the way that manifests in your experience of reality can be extremely profound, you know, because now all of a sudden this part of your brain's talking to this part of your brain and you've never had that conversation before. And now you're listening to it and you're like, whoa, what the fuck? You know, and like you bring in all this information that you literally did not have. Like you are pulling it. I mean, it was sure you had it, but it was buried. It was like subconscious, you know, and now you're able to like jump across the river, pull that and take a little piece of it back with you know, and I mean so I mean there's a lot of like indigenous tribes of humans who consume hallucinogenics on the regular. They think that's reality, you know.
There's
a lot of hallucinogenic tribes that do that stuff that say that like that literally is medicine and that we're sick because we don't have that connection in the way that they do, you know. So I feel like
connection to earth and everything.
So I feel like there's a space for this in this conversation somewhere, you know?
Sure.
I think it's fascinating that we are, because I think where this conversation is going, we're identifying different domains that have claims about what reality is, right? So you have DMT and it claims that there is this spiritual thing and this molecule connects you to it. Then we have the claim that there are kind of underlying patterns in nature that we might somehow have access to. Then we have the quantum physicists that we mentioned that also have claims that nature is in this waveform and whatever. So it's fascinating to kind of see all of these claims. And then we have the kind of philosophical tradition that I keep talking about, where everything is kind of a matter of definition and in flux and things can change. So I think it's so crucial in these conversations to be able to recognize that there are different competing claims.
Yeah.
And for individual people, no matter their relationship to VR or to whatever work it is that they do, to feel free to explore their opinions, but also acknowledge that position belongs to a certain kind of discipline and a sort of type of claim out of a field of competing claims.
Right.
And the beauty of these kind of conversations is that we are asking questions not only within a certain claim, and we don't fight with each other about these claims, but we say, okay, how can we logically take a step further and bring some clarity to this? And part of the initial connection for me between philosophy and VR was that I am still hoping that VR will prove to be a methodology in bringing some light to these competing claims. Because I thought, continental philosophy was proposing some very interesting things, just the way things with ayahuasca and DMT, they're things that bring up very interesting things.
Yeah.
But in both these cases, because actually I also have like half of a bookshelf about ayahuasca and DMT, so I'm very interested in those things. And I felt that both here and in the case of philosophy, we were lacking some good methodological tools to take this one step further. And by one step further, I mean to take it to a point where our experiments and the things we see and we feel when we think of these things or we do ayahuasca can be shared and verified somehow. Mm-hmm. Because as long as we are stuck in this bubble of subjectivity, it's like, okay, I know, mm-hmm. I've lived it, I've seen mm-hmm. it, but you're not gonna convince me with words,
no.
even if you're the most eloquent speaker in the world. Like you, that experience is just not
Seriously.
Something that you're gonna get through to me. And you know that, right?
Yeah.
Like everyone mm-hmm. that's had that kind of thing knows that there's like the really powerful stuff you just mm-hmm. can't really communicate it.
No.
So the magic of VR, and the question for me is, can something like VR be used as a methodology to get us closer to a point where we can communicate and verify some of these things in some of these areas? So does that make sense?
Yes, and I think it will. I think that's why we're here right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why you're mm-hmm. here right now, is that we think that that is going to happen.
For sure. And especially when you throw brain interfacing into that equation, and just thinking about that, we might be able to record some of these things from people's brains, right, as they happen.
Actually, like, put the thought
sure.
into a readable
Maybe.
Format, and then you can,
Maybe.
Like, consume
It's
it
possible.
Somehow.
You know, who knows where this technology is going to go, but it's going to get crazy. It's not going to be slowing down. There's a lot of smart people working on this stuff right
mm-hmm.
now. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens
mm-hmm.
with that. You know, maybe we'll be able to share perspectives, and who knows?
Mm-hmm. And one of those people is Andrea Ion Kojikoru. It has been so awesome having you on the show. Like, you are
yes.
super, super smart. And, you know, we
yes.
have conversations like this all the time. And it's so great to have somebody join the conversation
yep.
that
Very
is
refreshing.
Able to bring me perspective and provide a lot of, like, thought. You know, like, I'm going to take a lot from this conversation moving forward. So
Absolutely. How can
awesome.
People find you online if they want to look up your stuff?
The best way is on Twitter, and my DMs are always open, so
great.
I would love to chat about these things with anyone interested.
And what's your Twitter handle?
It's Andrea VR.
We'll put a link too.
Okay, we'll put the link.
With double E.
Double E for Andrea.
Yeah.
Great. Check down in the description. We'll also put that in the description of the video.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that we need to say?
Man, I don't think so. This has been a great conversation. Man, if you lived closer, we'd continue to have these conversations. I think you're a very smart person, and I'm interested to see how you contribute to this field in the future.
Oh, yeah. I will be following closely. Don't you worry about that.
Thank you so much for having me. I had the blast. It was a fantastic conversation. I hope what I said was not too confusing.
I don't think so.
But we just need to... We need to keep trying to bring light to these issues. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. And maybe you'll join us again in the future once we have more to talk about.
I would love to.
It sounds so good. Well, Andrea, thank you again. We'll see you soon.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And to everyone watching, thanks for joining. We
subscribe.
Really appreciate it. Yes, please subscribe.
To the channel. Like this video. Go
yes.
back to our other videos. Like those. Leave a comment if you haven't.
Yep.
Enter our giveaway, win
yes.
yourself a free game
free
or
stuff.
Some Asterion controller covers or whatever. Win mm-hmm. that shit. Have a good day. Good night. We'll see you guys soon. Thank you so much.
Adios.